Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. Good morning, Matt. I'm sure you celebrated Juneteenth yesterday. Did you go out and celebrate big time?
It's a wonderful, it's a great holiday, and it's I just love the story of that and the freedom that it represents. And we were here yesterday,
yes,
and we were helping Tucson celebrate Juneteenth by bringing them lots of great content.
Yeah, it was great. It was a good show in the morning. He did a good job, Tom. Thank you, Tom, for that. Well, I wanted to just say thanks to our good friends at Rise and Shine Donuts, Terry and Robert. They've blessed us with some morning good donuts this morning.
The morning sweets for the Morning Voice.
I love it. I love it. Check them out. They're open until 4 today and tomorrow. They are open early in the morning, and go by and grab some donuts or some breakfast and lunch items. They're at Speedway and Kolb, and check them out. They're delicious. A reminder that our next Eat and Greet is coming up Thursday, the 26th, 5:30 to 7 p.m. at Casa del Rio Restaurant and Cantina. The Morning Voice host will be there. Matt, I think you're going to be there. I'm going to be there. I don't know who the other four. I don't know if they'll all be there. Maybe we can drag Adam down. He's with us this morning, and my brother Bill will be there. And Kevin and his team at Casa del Rio are looking forward to seeing you. So if you have a chance, stop by 5:30 to 7 on Thursday at Casa del Rio at 22nd and Pantano. Well, today is success in the first hour and wonder in the second hour, and so we want to talk about success. And our first guest is Kat Lane. She is the Center Director of Mathnasium at River and Craycroft. Good morning, Kat. How are you?
Good morning. Good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here this morning. I gave you a math pun when you walked in the door. When I opened the door, I said, "Do you recognize me? Are you putting two and two together to find out who I am?" And you said, you've heard that many, many, many times.
I've heard my fair share of math puns,
yeah,
for sure.
I bet. I'm sure there'll be a few in the next half hour here, too, because
okay.
I'm well noted for that. So you are the center director for Mathnasium. Can you give the listeners some background on your experience and how you landed as the center director of Mathnasium?
Sure. I worked for online schools for 7 years in the special education department.
See, I'm Ed, and I'm special, so I'm special Ed.
So. And so that was a great job. I was from home. It was flexible, and I had my kids. They were younger.
Right.
They've gotten older, and I was kind of looking to grow in that career. And I applied at Mathnasium for an assistant center director position, which was a little bit of admin work, but mostly instructing with the kids. And I just fell in love with that. And then when the center director position became available, I jumped at the chance.
So. That's great. That's great. It's beautiful, beautiful location. Craycroft and River up there. And
that's
the
right.
Whole
yeah.
Foods, the Whole Foods Center, I call it.
Yeah. And right next to the library, which is nice.
Yeah. So Mathnasium was started in 2002 in Los Angeles. Now has over 1,000 learning centers nationwide. So it's a franchise, but it's a you have to remember that franchises are businesses just like any other mom and pop, that it has Arizona owners, local owners who are the owners. They just have bought into a franchise. So how long has Mathnasium been operating in Tucson, and when did your center open?
So the owners of this franchise started in Phoenix 15 years ago.
Wow.
And about 3 years ago, they expanded into Tucson with the Marana location, and then a year later opened the Catalina Foothills location.
Great, great. So there's two locations then to cover the northwest and the north side of town so far, and probably another one to come soon. So what is the mission of Mathnasium? What would be a mission there?
The mission is to teach kids math so they understand it, master it, and love it. We believe math can change their lives and that they can change the world.
That's great. Hey, Matt, I forgot to mention that we're on Facebook. People can see us live on Facebook, right?
Absolutely. Our Facebook page is 1030 The Voice, or you can share it to The Morning Voice, but go to 1030 The Voice, hit the like and follow button, and you can see your voice today.
Yeah. I was looked up and saw myself on the screen and said, I forgot to mention that we're live on Facebook. So. And if you have a question you want to ask somebody this morning, give us a call at 520-790-2040. So a great mission. Our guest is Kat Lane. She's the Center Director of Mathnasium on River Road. And So in essence, Mathnasium is a place for parents to take students to give them an educational support to what they would be learning in their regular school. And you do that both online and in person. But how do most of the families at your center experience the tutoring? Is it online or is the face-to-face? Which one is more popular?
Most of the kids like to come into the center because we really do have a really fun environment for teaching math. And so they like to come in. You know, we have a couple students who have physical limitations that prefer the online.
Right.
And we do have one student taking advantage of the hybrid option. Mm-hmm. She's an aspiring dancer, so she has a very intense dance schedule.
Right.
So she mostly does online, but she'll come in once in a while when she can.
And as you say, the atmosphere of Mathnasium connotates gymnasium, connotates kind of active and fun. And it's not just a bunch of kids sitting around with pieces of paper in front of them trying to solve long division. It's more of a fun atmosphere for them to love math.
It's absolutely fun, you know, and our instructors are math nerds, so they're excited about math.
Right. And why math only? Why is it important that Mathnasium only teaches math?
Well, I think it's important that the instructors are specialized. You know, all of our instructors have to pass a pretty rigorous math test. Mm-hmm. In order to be hired. And like I said, they're math nerds, so they're really passionate about it. And I think we all remember that at least the one math teacher who was, you know, a little bit wacky and excited about math. So I think kids learn best from that energy.
I did, you know, talking about math nerds, I was looking at the staff that you have there. Most of them are younger math nerds.
A good amount are college students with a major in math. We do have some teachers and retired teachers too.
Right. And between the two centers, it's maybe 20 or so teachers that are actually teaching.
Yes, that's right.
Tutors. What do you call them?
Instructors. We call them instructors because tutoring kind of implies students that are behind. We try to meet kids where they're at.
Right.
So if a student is really passionate about math and they really want to just learn more, we'll meet them where they're at as well. So
you know, that is a good point to bring up, that when people think of needing some extra help, but because maybe we're behind or maybe it's been difficult to understand the concepts or that the teacher's not explaining it well, all the excuses that a kid would come home with and say, I just don't understand this stuff. And you go on with that for long enough, then they don't want to engage and they kind of shut down and they don't want to learn and they don't want to, if it becomes confusing to them.
Yeah.
So you do help those students who are needing that extra boost to kind
of. Absolutely.
And once it clicked, my wife's a reading specialist. She retired after 30 years in the for teaching first grade and so forth, and she would teach students and they wouldn't get the reading. And when you just hang in there, and all of a sudden they'd have something called breakthrough where they, boom, all of a sudden they can read words and they can read sentences and all of a sudden they're reading everything once they get through that challenge of breakthrough. Same thing with math, right?
Absolutely. Those aha moments, you know, that's what I live for is seeing a kid just, oh, I get it.
I understand what they're doing here. Yeah.
Yeah.
And all math really is, I don't want to demote it to this, but all math really is a language. And it's like learning a foreign language. It's remembering the different principles of math, just like you would if you were learning a language. And
I imagine it's challenging for a teacher in, say, sixth grade, teaching a class of 30 students who most of them probably have some gap going back to third or fourth grade, and you know, she can't cater the lesson to each individual student. So, and being cumulative, math is once you've missed some, you know, one concept in third grade.
You need it in eighth grade, and if you don't get it in third grade, it's kind of tough in eighth grade to come back and get it. Yeah. And so, and that's a good point, having a teacher who is a teacher of math or even a general classroom teacher that has math as part of their curriculum to teach. Like you say, even though it'd be dreamy to be able to sit down and go one-on-one with a kid all the time, sometimes it's not possible when you got 30 or 40 kids in a classroom.
And exactly.
So that's where Mathnasium comes in and can provide that extra support and make that happen. And you've been doing this for a couple of years now yourself. It's an interesting experiment to watch that kid go from maybe not understanding a concept and then all of a sudden get that moment of breakthrough, right?
It's fantastic to watch, And one of the more rewarding parts of the job is a student coming in for their initial assessment and they are just defeated and insecure and stressed, and the parent is stressed.
And the last place they want to be is at
math meeting. Yes, they have to be dragged there yeah, for this assessment. Right. And then within a week or two, mom and dad are telling me, oh, I couldn't wait to come back. They were asking me when they could come back to math tutoring. And, you know, that's just great to hear. Right. You see them walk through the door three sessions in, and they're excited to be there to right, learn math. And yeah, even they can't believe it.
And it's funny how math fits into so many other parts of our life. Yeah. Whether you be a realtor, you got to use math every day. I was at the dentist this week, and, you know, he was actually measuring my teeth, or he was looking at something, and you know it's amazing how much math music uses math.
Yes, yeah.
Being at the right place on the stage uses math, and Matt was in here working on the cameras this morning with Facebook and getting the angles right and so forth. Well, that's math. That's all about math.
Yeah. So,
and if you go on through the years and get a career. In our business, Bill and I, we're in the advertising business. We use math all the time. We work on a percentage basis. So we need to know what the percentage is of the gross so that we can know how much we're going to make that on that particular thing. So it's math is really important.
And, it's an essential skill. Getting these kids
into the mathnasium so that they can do that. Well, after a short break, we'll discuss the outcomes of student learning after working with the mathnasium instructors, and we'll come back and talk about how mathnasium achieves that goal and how you've been able to do that over the last, 15 years here in Tucson, you the last couple of years as the center director. Okay, we'll be back after the break. This is KVOI 1030 AM, Tucson's live local talk and radio. You're listening to The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. We're talking math and numbers here. We're with Kat Lane. She is the Center Director for Mathnasium, located at 5605 East River Road at Craycroft in the Whole Foods Center. Hey, we're live on Facebook today. You can follow us on Facebook. You can also give us a call at 790-2040 if you have a question for Kat or for me about how we teach students math in a fun and exciting thing. So, Kat, we were talking about the Mathnasium Method. What is the Mathnasium Method?
So it is a proprietary method that was developed by the founder, mm-hmm. Larry Martinek. He was a mathematics educator in Berkeley. He is. He's still running the original Mathnasium Center there. And he developed this unique way of explaining math concepts to kids. And he was really inspired by his son being frustrated at mm-hmm. school. So
I should go take a mathnasium class because I love math, but you know, my years of calculus are over. I leave that to Matt Neely. He knows that better than I do. So so one would think that if using a math instructor, a tutor, a person that is teaching students who are struggling, however, you also help those that are excelling, or just, you know, average, but you help those that are excelling. Tell us about the program for gifted math students.
I would say we have about a quarter of our students, who just really love math and can't get enough, and their parents are just looking for an outlet because, you know, the parents are a little tired of the math right. of the math questions
or,
at home.
It's over their head like
yes.
me. Yeah.
Even from a seven-year-old, they're asking big math theory questions just because right. they are really interested. So they send them to us, and, you know, they just love coming. We also have some older SAT prep students. We had a girl come to us. She scored 1480
wow.
on the SAT and wanted to do better.
Wow.
So she came to us to try to improve her math score, and she did bring up her math score in 3 months, 120 points. So, just a really self-driven kid.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. So helping both struggling, but also just a kid that just wants to hone their skills on math theory and how you use this decimal point moving this way and that way and all the things that you need to learn. Just get some extra practice on that. But then also the excelling student who is trying to really shore up those things.
Yeah, the high achievers.
And they might be in AP classes or honors classes.
Absolutely.
But they want to do even more than what they're getting in the classroom. So you can develop those that sense. Do you have any college students come in to see you, or are they all?
No, we stop at 12th grade.
12th grade, yeah.
When they get to college, we give them a job.
Yeah, they obviously they come back and they are an instructor for
yes,
you at that.
Yeah.
So our guest is Kat Lane. She's the Center Director for Mathnasium at River and Craycroft. So it you say that the goal of Mathnasium is comprehensive, to build confidence in math, master math concepts, which are the basics of math, but also develop a love of learning, excel in school, and achieve their potential. How is that Mathnasium system successful in achieving that goal of that whole person coming out of the Mathnasium thing, where they're excited about life and excited about going to school and excited about being a young person who's got the whole world in front of them?
Sure. Well, like I said before, our instructors really love math, so they're able to teach it with that passion and energy that helps kids get excited about it too. And their learning plan is really customized. No two students have the same curriculum in their binders. We don't want to waste time on things they already know, and we just kind of focus on the things that they still need to learn or want to learn.
Right. You shore up the things that they've already learned, but then you move on to the next concept so that they can attain more.
Yeah. And we keep trying to reach those light bulb moments, those aha moments. Mm-hmm. And with those, you know, that helps develop the love of learning and helps them to build confidence and that, you know, can take that out into the world and into school. And
they become a better student. They become, they like going to school.
Yes.
They become a better kid at home because they like, they're achieving their own personal and maybe family goals.
The fights about homework have stopped.
Yeah.
You know?
So they want to go do homework as opposed to having to go do homework.
Yeah.
So that's a great thing. So, well, the proof is in the results. 94% of parents report improvement in their child's math skills and understanding. 93% of parents report improved attitude towards math after attending Mathnasium. And 90% of students saw an improvement in their school grades. You're in the 90% percentile. Did I get that math right, Adam? I don't know if I got that math right, but they're everything above the 90% percentile. Those are impressive statistics, and that means you're making a difference in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the most rewarding thing about the job is watching these kids come in defeated.
What do the parents say when they see a kid excel and achieve their goals? What is their response to you?
You know, the parents are just as stressed, if not more, than the kids when they come in. And you can see that they're relieved, you know, that we provide a solution. And they're also just surprised by how excited their kid is about math.
You know, my wife, as I told you, taught for 30 years, first graders mostly, she's a reading specialist, but you know, she did a lot of work with kids in the classroom and obviously getting them excited about reading and so forth. But she really leaned heavily on the parents to make sure that at home there was reading time and read to the kids and read with the kids and have the kid read to you and make reading a formidable part of what their growing up was all about. Parents have to be involved in their kids' learning of math as well. They maybe don't sit down and do problems with them, but they got to set aside a space, a time, encouragement, and if they want to sit down and try and learn with them, that's probably good too.
Well, we don't send homework home. The only thing we really ask parents is if they are going to bring homework in to us, that the kid looks at it first, does what they can, so that when they come in, we can really hone in on what they need help with.
Right. But at home, though, like you say, after they've gone to Mathnasium, they come home and they're a little more excited to want to do their math homework that they get.
Yeah.
And that's when the parent can sit down with them when they're doing their regular math homework and say, what'd you learn at Mathnasium and what'd they tell you here and how do you fix this and those kind of things. So the parent involvement is an important part. So how can parents then schedule a free assessment to see if their son or daughter needs some assistance with math skills?
They can just go online. There's a button on the website. And they can schedule a free assessment or they can call the center.
Or stop by. If you're going to Whole Foods, stop by one day and go in and look at the place and you'll be amazed of how wonderful it is. But that assessment is important. That takes about 60 minutes.
The higher the math, the longer it'll take. So younger kids, 30 minutes. And
it's just an assessment to see where their skill level is and where you can build from there.
Exactly. We give them an assessment that we're hoping they will score 40 to 70% on that we have enough data to build them a learning plan.
Right. And then from there you build that plan. And if they're gifted, that you accelerate it. If they need remedial skills, you make that happen as well.
Yes, that's right. It's the same process.
Right. That's fantastic. Any programs during the summer that are special if parents wanted to jump in during the summer to get some training before they go back to the fall for classes?
We still have one summer program that's available. It's our summer pass. It's a little bit more flexible than our other plans. It's 12 sessions between now and August 1st.
Right. So again, tell us where you're located and how people get a hold of you.
We're at Craycroft and River, between Whole Foods and the library. You can go online to mathnasium.com, find the location. You can give me a call at 520-989-0579 or just stop in.
It's also a great gift for grandparents to give to a child.
Absolutely.
You know, give it to the parents, basically, but, but pay for some tutoring and some instruction in math.
It's we have thing. Some fantastic grandparents that are involved over there.
Instead of taking them to the ice cream store every time, why don't you drop them off at the mathnasium first? So.
And then ice cream after.
Then ice cream after they do their work. So thank you, Kat Lane, Center Director for Mathnasium, located at 5605 East River Road, Craycroft. I call it in the Whole Foods Center. Appreciate you coming in today, talking to us about math and math skills. And
yes, thanks for having me.
Appreciate your good work that you're doing with the young folks here in your area. East Tucson. You've got one over in the kind of west northwest Tucson as well.
Right.
So give them a call at the Mathnasium if you need some help, and we'll have you back sometime to talk about your successes, okay?
Okay, sounds great.
Great. This is KVOI 1030 AM, Tucson's live local talk radio, and you're listening to The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley, and we're going to talk movies and fun here in the second part of success on a Friday morning. Just a reminder that our next Eat and Greet is this Thursday, June 26th from 5:30 to 7 at Casa del Rio Restaurant and Cantina. The Morning Voice host will be there, and you should be there too and enjoy the fun. That's Thursday, the 26th, 5:30 p.m. at Casa del Rio, located at 22nd and Pantano. Our guest for this segment is Trish Madonna. She is one of the longtime managers at Roadhouse Cinemas. Good morning to you, Trish.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. How did you get to working and become a manager at Roadhouse Cinema? You've been there quite a while. How'd you get that and going and become a manager?
I actually started back in 2017, a long time ago.
Right.
Just answered one of the job recruitments for starting there and worked my way up from the bottom all the way to being a facility maintenance manager.
So. That's great. Well, thank you for keeping the place clean and keeping everybody on task. That's great. So Roadhouse is kind of a unique story. It launched its first location in October of 2014. That's 11 years ago, I guess. It was founded by I'm going to get these three guys because I'm supposed to know them, Scott Castle, Vincent Mast, and Josh Snyder, as a dine-in movie experience at the repurposed, remember the Crossroads 6? I remember that. That was an interesting theater. And I have to tell you, I didn't think it was going to work. And what they had presented, at the time I was a teacher I was a teacher at the University of Arizona in the film and television school, and they had a lot of students involved in that very first couple of years there. How's the facility changed since they first started and they took over the 6 theaters? How has it changed in that time frame?
It has changed exponentially. We actually added a whole addition onto the building. We expanded to 9 theaters.
Right.
Two of them being stadium-like seating.
Right.
Offer more seats.
Right.
In those ones, and then recently we also expanded into the old Bed Bath and Beyond building with Roadies.
Right. And the neat thing about your theaters, at least the one I was in on Sunday with my for Father's Day, was they're very comfortable seating, and it's not like what we thought of maybe when there was Crossroads 6. You go in and you sit in an uncomfortable chair and are squeezed in next to somebody. The chairs are nice and comfortable, and you get to lean back and even put your feet up like a Lazy Boy recliner, right?
They are revolutionary recliners.
Yeah, very cool. Very
yes.
cool.
Yes.
So part of the fun part about going to Roadhouse is the dine-in movie experience. So you have full service. You have first-run movies. So I saw The Life of Chuck is what I saw, which was a great movie, by the way. And full-service in-theater dining. So it's kind of an interesting process the way it works. Everybody is ordering right when they get in there. But the one thing I noticed was that everybody is working the theater together, the team that you have there. It's not just your server that's bringing in your food. Everybody's bringing in everybody's food. So it's a team effort, definitely.
It's a whole wheel turning. It's a powerhouse. We're one huge team, just bringing it all together and providing that dine-in experience and trying to just spoil the people that come there.
Yeah, and it kind of, because the movie is starting and so forth, they get all the orders in and then they try to get them all in kind of before the movie starts, or some food comes in after the movie has started. But it's kind of cool. You have your own little table. You have a little light if you need something else. You push a button and boy, they're there, Johnny on the spot. And then you get to lean back in your luxury recliner and enjoy the movie. It's kind of a unique experience.
Absolutely. I believe we've thought about just about everything to bring a different kind of experience to you when you're watching a movie.
Right. One of the cool things about it is the fact that you can have a little bit of adult beverage too if you want to, because you have that capability as well, because you're a restaurant as well as a theater. So you have a liquor license, and so people can enjoy a cocktail as well.
We do offer a full bar with liquor, beer, and wine, and yes, we bring everything to your seat.
Right, that's very cool. So one of the neat things about the dining experience is that you emphasize locally influenced menus, chef-crafted, so it's not your typical, I don't want to say bar food, but it's more of a elevated food quality. So the kitchen door happened to be open when I was walking down the hallway, and I kind of glanced in there. It's a full-service kitchen, and you guys are producing some pretty sophisticated food back there.
Oh, yeah, and we actually let our chefs create our menu. We have a special menu every month, and we allow our chefs to create that menu and explore their creativity and bring that to the community.
Right, so. And the other thing that is kind of cool is if you're a popcorn eater, you get a big silver bowl full of popcorn, and you have 1,000 different flavors of popcorn.
It is our most popular item, and for good reason. It is delicious. I have popcorn every time I come to see a movie as well.
Yeah. So you can get just regular popcorn, you can get butter and salted popcorn, but then you got about 17 different flavors.
Different varieties, yes. Yeah, yes, yeah. We have glazed and confused, which is our caramel variety. We have jalapeno for the spicy lovers. We have salt and vinegar. We have regular. We have no salt, no butter. I mean, we can customize it pretty much however you'd like.
It's pretty cool to see those big bowls of popcorn coming into the place.
And it can be a little overwhelming, too, because they're huge. I mean,
but the irony of that is they're refillable, though, too.
They are, yes.
Yeah, if you buy a big bowl, you can fill it back up again.
Yes, we do give you a refill.
Yeah. Our guest this morning is Trish Madonna. She's one of the managers at Roadhouse Cinemas, located at Swan and Grant. And you offer, oversized leather recliners, tray tables for dining, and you also have some adult-only auditoriums. What does that mean when you have a quieter, upscale experience? Sometimes you'll say, this movie maybe isn't appropriate for little kids, so we'll just have adults only in here?
So we do go by the rating system, and we, you know, of course, R-rated movies, we adults only.
Yeah.
And we do have family-designated films, and then for our family audiences, and then we also have our adult designated films, R-rated, and
right. And so, tell us a little bit about when you're open. You're an interesting business in that you're open 365 days a year, right?
Yes.
Whether it's Christmas or Easter or Thanksgiving or yesterday Juneteenth or 4th of July, you're going to be open, and there's going to be movies playing every day of the year.
Absolutely. If you'd like to join us on a holiday with your family, we'd be more than happy to accommodate you and provide you with the experience that we do 365 days a year.
And you're open about 12 and a half hours. You're open starting at 10 a.m. on Monday through Sunday every day. And you go till about 10:30, sometimes a little later, depending on how late the movie goes. Sometimes some of those movies creep past 10:30 just a little bit.
Yeah, it always depends on the movies. So
you get Titanic and you have a 4.5-hour movie, you know, you might be there a little bit longer, but 10:30. And then you also have a full-service bar in the lobby there, and so there's happy hour, too. You can actually come to Roadhouse Cinemas and actually not go to a movie. You can come in and drink.
Yes, you can actually come and visit our lobby and enjoy a beverage with your company. And
right. And you have two happy hours. You have Monday through Friday from 3 to 6, you have a happy hour, but you also have Monday through Thursday, 9 p.m. to close. You also have happy hour prices.
Reverse happy hour is what we call it, yes. Yeah. And we also offer discounts on some of our appetizers during that time as well.
That's great. That's what we did because we were there at that time. So it's great. And so kind of a fun place to go. It's a great family place. It's a great place for date night. It's a good place to go as a group of friends just to go and show up. I was actually there for an event, and it was a office, and they had all of their office staff there, and then they invited some clients in. And so what they did is they offered appetizers and drinks in the lobby. Then they went into the theater, and they did a few things regarding their own company, and they made some presentations and so forth. And then they let you watch a movie if you wanted to. And then when you came out, you got to have some more drinks and hang out. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a neat place to have an event too, if you want to. And you don't have to watch a movie either. You can just rent the theater to just have an event.
Yes, we go above and beyond to accommodate anybody that like to have an event with us and try to incorporate whatever they would like to offer for their company through us.
What is the capacity of some of the theaters? You have 9 theaters. What's the largest, the stadium size there?
The largest one we can accommodate about 104 people in that.
Okay. And then the one I was in had about, I was in theater 8.
That's one of our smallest theaters, and right. It's more intimate. That's about 30 seats.
Yeah, very
more
cool.
Often that one is rented out for events.
Events and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Okay, well, we'll be back with more about movies and fun with Trish Madonna, manager of Roadhouse Cinema, after a short break. But we'll discuss some fun things that you can do at Roadhouse Cinema in their new facility called Roadies, which is right next door. We'll talk about that new facility and all the cool things you can do there. This is KVOI 1030 AM, Tucson's live local talk radio, and you are listening to The Morning Voice.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat.
The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. We are talking about making movies and seeing movies at the beautiful Roadhouse Cinema at Swan and Grant Road in Tucson, northeast corner. Our guest this morning is Trish Madonna, one of the managers at Roadhouse Cinema. Good morning again, Trish.
Good morning.
Let's talk a little bit about fun and games. We've talked about theater and the beautiful theater that you have and the great in-seat dining and the full-service bar and the locally inspired food and so forth. But about 2 years ago, Bed Bath & Beyond shut down across the nation, actually. And a lot of these big, giant box stores and so forth, landlords all over the country are wondering, what are they going to do with these big spaces? And your ownership came up with a great idea to come and convert that whole giant space to something they called Roadies, Lanes, Games, and Gastro Pub. So you opened that up about 6 months ago it opened?
Actually, about 3 months
ago.
Okay. Very new.
Yeah,
yes.
Very new. Tell us a little bit about Roadies, Lanes, Games, and Gastro Pub. It's right next door to, you walk through a hallway and you actually get right into Roadies from the theater. So tell us a little bit about what Roadies is and what kind of a theme or idea that you have there.
Roadies is a family entertainment center. We offer axe throwing, crazy darts, bowling, laser tag, a full arcade, a full bar, sports bar. We have over 40 TVs showing all the main events, sports events as well. Just wanted to bring something a little different to Tucson.
What's kind of neat there, if you go in there, it's kind of cool to have the parents be able to sit down and have an adult beverage and kind of monitor what their kids are doing, and their kids are out doing arcade games or whatever they're doing, bowling or whatever, And it's kind of a nice mix of, and then, you know, you obviously the adults and parents can get up and participate in some of the games, but you don't have to. You can sit there and watch the game, or you can enjoy the atmosphere.
The open concept makes it really easy just to sit there and take it all in, yes.
Right, right. And so it is, you took over the old Bed Bath & Beyond, and it took about a year to convert the space, slowly but surely. They converted it and opened about 3 months ago, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful, huge, it's ginormous, but it's beautiful, and it has really kind of changed. So when you walk in the front door of the theater, you have the bar and the popcorn and some seating, and then you go into your theater and you can eat there. Then when you finish, you can just turn, instead of going left, you turn right, and you go out through the big doors and you're into Rhodey's, and you can hang out there for a while as well. So it's a kind of a comprehensive experience that you can have.
Absolutely. Connecting those two buildings was a great decision. And
right,
we're offering something absolutely different for Tucson.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about some of the cool things you have in Rhodey's. You have Spark Augmented Reality Bowling with 14 lanes. This is kind of an interesting thing. You have VIP lounge there and everything. So what is augmented reality bowling? When someone is going to participate in bowling, they're thinking of just the normal ball going down the lane and knocking the pins over. But this is a little bit different than that.
Yes. So it uses infrared technology to record what your ball is doing while it's going down the lane. And some of the objects of the games are not just to knock over as many pins as you can, but to knock over certain pins
right.
that are displayed onto the lane itself from a projector that's installed above it.
Wow.
So
it gives it a little bit more skill and more interactive
yes,
activity.
Yes, more interaction, more interactive game with the players. So. Yeah.
And you also have the kind of the new trend. Obviously, it's not true if you're a lumberjack. You've been doing this for centuries. But axe throwing is kind of a fun new activity that many establishments have had over the years now. But you have axe throwing. This is real axe throwing. You're throwing an axe against an actual target.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about that.
So that is augmented reality as well. And we use infrared technology there to record your axe being thrown at... There, it is real wood as well, but we have 6 lanes, and it's been a big hit.
Yeah.
It's constantly.
Yeah. People really like that.
Yeah. Yes, always.
And it gets when someone makes a score, it's a lot of cheering and so forth, too. It's kind of interesting. I was watching them do that. It's kind of interesting when they create that. Crazy Darts, a 98-inch high-tech dartboard. Tell us a little bit about Crazy Darts.
Same thing. It's you have infrared technology that records your scores, and you can play traditional games, and they also change it up, have a variety of games there. It's really awesome.
Great.
So puts a spin on a classic.
Yeah, puts a spin. So all of your games really are kind of unique and engaging and so forth.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the hours for Rhodey's and where your location, just to the southeast of the... of the theater, but it's in the same building where the old Bed Bath & Beyond was. So it's at Grant and Swan. What are the hours, Monday through Friday?
So it's Monday through Thursday. We are open at 10 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Okay.
Sunday through Thursday, it's
10 a.m. to...
10 a.m. to 11 p.m.
11 p.m., right.
And then Friday and Saturday, it's 10 a.m. to 12 p.m.
Right.
12 a.m.
That's great.
Yes.
And you're located at... okay, last question for you. Since this segment is about success, how do you define success?
I define it as being goal-oriented and driven to work hard.
That's great. And you have just demonstrated that at Rhodey's. We appreciate you, the hard work you do there.
Absolutely.
And the facility looks great, and you're responsible for that. So good job on keeping it clean and family-friendly.
Keep it up and running. That's my job.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Trish Madonna from Rhodey's and Roadhouse Cinema. We appreciate you being here. We'll have you back to talk a little bit with Tom Moulton on the Thursday show, a little more in-depth about Rhodey's coming up in a few weeks here. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVY 1030 AM. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley, and on Fridays we talk about the good things happening at the University of Arizona. when you think about it, between just the main campus, Speedway to 6th Street, from Campbell to Park and Euclid over there, what is going on that campus certainly affects all of us in the city of Tucson. Take that out of the middle of Tucson, what do you got? Boy, it's a huge impact. And so it's important that we highlight the good and positive things that are going on. We hear all the negative things from time to time about all the Masters of Marketing students who are doing the, well, I didn't mean to say that, Adam, but, you know, that we hear about some terrible things from time to time, and like any large, you know, university is like a small city, and lots of things are happening in small cities all over the country. And so we can talk about those negative things, and it's important to know about those. But on this program, we like to talk about the positive things. We call it Wonder, where we talk about the wonderful things happening. This segment is sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant on 4th Avenue, a great partner who has been involved with the University of Arizona for many, many years, and our good friends at Hughes Federal Credit Union, who are a main sponsor of Wonder. I want to just remind everyone that our next Eat and Greet is this Thursday, the 26th, from 5:30 to 7 at Casa del Rio Restaurant. The Morning Voice host will be there. Matt will be there. I'll be there. Maybe Adam will be there. Bill will be there. That's Thursday, the 26th, at 5:30 p.m. at Casa del Rio. That's located at 22nd Street in Pantano. So on Wonder this morning, our guest is Dr. Jacob Negre. He is a biological anthropologist and primatologist at the University of Arizona. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Ed. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. So Wonder talks about these good things that are happening, and you're one of the good things that is happening at the University of Arizona. You're doing some really important research and making a difference in not only the lives of all of us human beings, but also some of our good friends in the animal kingdom. You came to the University of Arizona by way of Miami and Boston. Can you tell us a little bit about your educational and professional journey that landed you at the University of Arizona?
Absolutely. I started off as an undergraduate at Miami University, which is in Ohio, not Florida. And I was studying to be a journalist, actually, at the time. I'm very interested in writing. And I just happened to meet someone who was studying chimpanzees in their natural habitats. And that was the beginning of the end for me. I was absolutely hooked. And so I pursued a PhD at Boston University. After a couple research roles after that, I found my way to the University of Arizona.
Well, welcome, and we're glad that you're here. So you say that you had a little fascination at the zoo when you were a kid with the primates and so forth, and watching them and obsessing over the gorillas was the comment that I read about you. What was that chance encounter with the primatologist that nudged you towards anthropology?
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I absolutely was hooked on visiting the gorillas at the zoo. Mm-hmm. I never thought I would do anything professionally with gorillas. I didn't even know necessarily that there were options along those lines. But I had taken an anthropology course by happenstance, and it just so happened that the study of non-human primates is a huge part of anthropology. And so that got the wheels in my head turning about whether I could pursue something in the study of primates professionally.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's great. So what is a biological anthropologist? What does a biological anthropologist do?
Yes. So if the field of anthropology in general is interested in the question of what are we, what are humans?
It's funny that I asked you a question of what are they, and that's what you asked, the question you
exactly,
asked, right?
Exactly. We're full of questions. But a biological anthropologist more specifically leverages all the tools and perspectives of biology to address that question of what we are. And so everything from genetics to the study of hormones is in the wheelhouse of a biological anthropologist.
That's interesting. You know, we've had over the last 17 months or so, we've had a lot of people from the astronomy world and so forth, and they're obviously trying to answer the basic question of who are we and where do we come from? Mm-hmm. And anthropology is answering those similar questions, right? Of who we are, what we're made of, how we're made of, and where we came from, and where are we going?
Very much so. Asking the same questions at different scales.
Right, right. So you're a primatologist as well, specializing in disease ecology, ecophysiology, and animal behavior, studying factors that shape primate illness and aging and other things. So what does a primatologist do that's kind of an offshoot of anthropology?
Yeah, so primatologists are interested in the study of our primate kin, right? And usually primatologists are interested in some capacity about how other primates can tell us about ourselves. So the order primates is where we find our own species. Homo sapiens, we're nestled among our primate kin. And so a lot of the words that you threw out were you know, fancy ways of saying that I'm interested in how environments shape the bodies and behavior of our close kin, in particular chimpanzees, who are our closest living relatives.
In on the broad spectrum of things, when we talk about the weather today being 113 degrees or whatever, and we talk about climate and so forth, climate shapes how we as human beings engage with one another. If we're in the polar regions, it might be a little different than if we're in the equator. And if we're in the jungle, it's different than if we're on a desert like Tucson. Actually, one of the strange questions I was going to ask you, which I thought of yesterday when I was thinking about this, is that your field research in Uganda and so forth is in the jungles and so forth. And I guess I answered my own question. Why are there no chimpanzees in the desert?
In the desert, yeah, that's such an interesting question. So chimpanzees do mostly live in the rainforest, but less well known or recognized is that they do live in savannas too. So they do get out into drier climates. They're very fascinating. They make use of caves and such to survive the great heat. Chimps do primarily eat ripe fruit. That's kind of the basis of their diet. And so unfortunately, the desert itself really doesn't provide that.
The saguaro blooms once a year,
and
that's about it. There's not a lot of fruit in the desert landscape, and so also the heat probably is another issue. Part of being in the trees and so forth is a little, maybe not necessarily cooler, but a little different ecosystem for them. And and also from the safety perspective, if you're up high, you stay away from the leopard or something that's walking along underneath
also
you.
Also true.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your field research in Ngogo in Uganda's Kibali National Park, a leading site for chimp research. Talk a little bit about that spectacular place and your involvement with going there as a researcher.
Absolutely. So Kibali is really fascinating for primatologists because it is perhaps the single most primate-rich forest in the world. There are so many different species of primates here, and chimpanzees are just one of them. I started working there about 12 years ago at Ngogo, which is spelled N-G-O-G-O. It's nestled right in the middle of that forest, Kibali. And it's a really fascinating place to study chimps for a number of reasons. One is that there are so many of them there. Ngogo has historically been the single largest group of chimpanzees ever recorded, with over 200 individuals at its peak.
Wow. So you go there on a regular basis. You just got back a couple of weeks ago from being there for an extended period of time. Maybe you'll get to go back in the summer or fall again, but it's a place where people who are researching from all over the world go and have this living laboratory for researching chimpanzees and other species as well.
Absolutely. So we are completely hands-off, right? I can't underline that enough. We try to just let them live their lives and interfere as little as possible. And in most cases, I would say they really just have no interest in us at all at this point. We just let them go about their business. The youngest ones try sometimes to interact with us. The kids are most curious, but we just don't engage them and just want to see them behave as naturally as possible.
Right. Our guest for Wonder is Dr. Jacob Negre. He's a biological anthropologist at the University of Arizona, and this is Wonder, where we talk about good stories at the University of Arizona, sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant on 4th Avenue and Hughes Federal Credit Union. So on New Year's Eve in 2016, a viral outbreak was detected, and the chimpanzees of Ngogo were affected by that. Can you talk a little bit about that fateful New Year's Eve and what happened?
Yes. So I was in the middle of a 14-month stint at Ngogo. I was working on my PhD at the time, and we were beginning to celebrate the end of the year. And we noticed that the chimpanzees were beginning to cough. We were increasingly concerned as days went on, when it became very clear to us that many chimpanzees were ill. And this illness was moving very quickly through the group. At that point, we started calling veterinarians to our site to consult and to help us deal with this outbreak. At the end of the day, that is to say 2 months later, we had 25 chimpanzees who died during this outbreak. Many of them had experienced illness. And at the same time, we had been collecting samples from them, biosamples. That is to say, poo that they had been leaving behind. And we took those samples back to the lab and analyzed them for any indication of what had been making them ill. And we found the genetic material of a virus called metapneumovirus that is a very common cold virus in humans all across the world. It's something we take for granted. It's something that kids will regularly have every year that makes them, you know, get a little sniffle. And most of us as adults carry this virus around without even being aware that we have it, that we're infected. When we were in the middle of this outbreak and were concerned that this was caused by a human virus, we began to implement very quickly, very, very rapidly, a series of prevention protocols, disease prevention protocols to keep these chimps safe from viruses that we were potentially giving them.
Right. I was just curious, of the 25 that passed in during this time, were they the vulnerable? Was it the little ones and the older ones, or was it across the all age groups of chimpanzees? Anybody that got this cold or this virus then perished, or was it particularly vulnerable to those that were maybe a little older, a little younger?
That's a great question. So although individuals across the age spectrum did die, it was mostly the young and the old. So that was a pattern that's very common among humans as well.
Yeah, the same thing happens when a virus hits the United States or another country. Mm-hmm. It's the vulnerable that are affected most. And I guess that's because your body has its own way of trying to attack the virus and get it out of there. And if you're more robust, you're able to do that a little bit better.
That's right. And also, it takes us some time to develop our immune systems. So exposure is a huge part of this early in our lives. It helps us build our immune systems. And as we get older, our immune systems start to wane.
Right, right. Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about your research in the jungle with the chimpanzees. This is Wonder Stories About the Good Things at the University of Arizona. You're listening to KVOI 1030 AM, Tucson's live local talk, and you're listening to The Morning Voice.
You can join us on Facebook Live and YouTube. Go to 1030 The Voice on Facebook or YouTube, and we will see you there. Morning Voice will be right back.
Well, welcome back to The Morning Voice. This is the Wonder segment, stories about the good things going on at the University of Arizona, sponsored by our good friends at Caruso's Italian Restaurant. Going there Sunday night to have a birthday dinner for one of my son's girlfriends. We're going to enjoy a nice meal at Caruso's. And then it's also brought to you by Hughes Federal Credit Union, one of our stalwart companies here in Tucson, doing great work. We like Hughes, don't we, Matt? They're a pretty good company.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we love them. Our guest for this segment is Dr. Jacob Negri, a biological anthropologist and primatologist at the University of Arizona. Good morning again.
Good morning, Ed.
You have documented practices. This is going to sound familiar to some people: masking, quarantining, and keeping a distance to help keep chimpanzees' interaction safe from transmitting viruses and disease. Some of us can remember an ancient history, a time in our own lives when masking, quarantining, and keeping a safe distance was important to combat COVID. How did your study help document this and that? This concept of these practices are important in order to keep these chimpanzees from infecting one another.
Yeah, I have a friend who likes to say that we were masking before it became regrettably popular.
Right.
So in 2017, we started implementing these protocols in order to prevent disease spread from humans to chimpanzees at my research site. And so the first thing we did was, we started wearing face masks. We became more cognizant of the distance we were keeping from these animals. So we used to have a policy of a minimum of 5 meters or about 15 feet. And we doubled that in the aftermath of an outbreak of human disease. It became very clear that even these few changes that we had made were associated with a decrease in the coughing that we were observing from the chimpanzees. And this was before we implemented quarantines. So when 2020 rolled around and we were all in quarantine, we began to implement a policy at my field site of quarantining for a time before going out to visit the chimpanzees.
So if you flew in, you'd wait a week before you went out into the jungle to be with the chimpanzees. You would stay and make sure you weren't carrying something that was going to be troublesome back in the jungle, right?
Exactly right. And there was a huge concern to prevent COVID in particular from getting to those chimpanzees.
That would have been interesting if they would have transferred that. And then what does that do to the animal kingdom if we're already transmitting human diseases to animals in different places and vice versa, bird flu and so forth. But it's important that we are cognizant of that and make sure that we're not, even our 249 years ago, we were started as a country, and back when all the Europeans came to America, that's a big issue of transmitting disease to one another. If your body's not ready for that, it can be a problem. So your research with chimpanzees in Uganda and places like Ngogo is important because it shapes these best practices to help keep these chimps and other ape species safe. How do you do that when you have so many tourists and researchers trying to go and be part of the jungle and be part of that? How do you keep these protocols in place?
That's a really great question. And so the first step there is the evidence that these protocols do work, right? So we were very keen in that regard to just get some data out there and show the efficacy of these approaches. But I am currently working on a large collaborative project with the Ugandan government to implement these policies at sites where tourists visit chimpanzees and gorillas. And so we're kind of redoing the study a little bit as we implement masks and greater distances at these tourist sites. We want to see how that impacts the health of these chimps and gorillas.
So it would be less of an interaction where you go and are... You know, can they touch you? You touch them, and you be right there with them. It's an observation. Step back and watch them in their natural habitat, and then try not to engage or get too close to them.
Exactly,
and stay away from them so that they can live their life. And like you say, they kind of ignore you guys, right? The little ones might come up and engage with you, but you just ignore them, right?
You ignore them, yeah. And it's really important as well at these sites to communicate to the people who are visiting just how great an impact they can have on the health of these animals. And most people are there because they love them. Yeah.
Right.
And so they don't want to hurt them, obviously.
Right, right. So how to keep chimps and other animals safe from human disease, that's a longstanding issue for conservation researchers. But it's important. We're trying to protect the chimpanzees, and we're trying to protect the different species and so forth. But it also can do the reverse. They can teach us a lot about ourselves and about human interaction and our understanding of ourselves. So how does your research help in that regard?
Yeah, that's also a great and big question. Right. But we're interested, for instance, in how environments shape the aging process. Why do certain individuals age so well and others seem to really struggle or don't live as long? We're also interested in how social relationships, for instance, can impact the cohesion of groups, why a certain group would stay together for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a side story, but our group in Gogo a few years ago split. Mm. That's the first time we've documented in great detail a chimpanzee group splitting. And these are chimps who've known each other for decades. So we're trying to understand how that happened. And it's, you know, I will leave you to draw the parallels with humans.
Did they build a wall? That's the question.
Some days it feels like it, quite honestly.
Yeah. That's great. Well, you're part of Wonder, where we talk about the good things going on at the university. We like to ask our Wonder guests this question. What is one thing at the University of Arizona that you think is full of wonder?
Well, I'm going to risk being a little corny here, but it is the passion of the faculty and students at the university, and the fact that they pursue questions and mm-hmm. problems in the world that they can really dig their teeth into and solve.
Yeah, that's great. You know, part of the joy of being, I've been an instructor at the Eller College for 35 years. Part of the joy of that is the outcomes of the students and getting them launched into their careers and having them help us solve some of those big questions and problems down the line. It's very rewarding as an instructor. Have them come back 10, 15, 20 years later and say, here's what I'm doing now, and thanks for launching me on my path. So thank you for the good work that you're doing in Uganda with the chimpanzees. Our thanks is to Dr. Jacob Negri, a biological anthropologist and primatologist at the University of Arizona in the College of Social and Behavior Sciences. at the University of Arizona. We appreciate you being here and the good work. And when you back off to Uganda again, maybe in the fall?
Maybe the fall, fingers crossed. Yeah, we'll see.
Well, can people find out a little bit about your work somewhere? Can they look at your research?
Thank you for asking. Yeah. Our larger group's research site is the Ngogo Chimpanzee Project. And our website is just ngogochimpanzeeproject.org. And you can find out a bit of what we're doing in a lot of different ways.
Great photos and great engagement. And it's a great story, too, to hear. Are there chimpanzees in other parts of South America, where there are big jungles in other places, or is it mostly Africa? Or?
Yeah, so chimpanzees are restricted to kind of sub-Saharan Africa along the equator. So all the way from far eastern Africa to western Africa is where chimpanzees
range. That's where most of them are. Mm-hmm. And yeah, some in some other places, but that's where you get the biggest concentration.
Exactly.
Well, that's great. Very fascinating and great work that you're doing. We appreciate the good work that you're doing at the University of Arizona. Again, a reminder that if you're interested, we are can talk. Maybe we'll get Jacob to come and be part of our eat and greet, which is this Thursday. So maybe if you're not doing anything, stop by. And some of our listeners would probably like to talk to you some more about the chimpanzees in Africa and what they mean for us. So thanks again for being here today. And Matt, we're looking good. Do you have a good fun song to lead us out on, something exciting? Here he goes.
Now you're going to put me on the spot. I got something else queued up. Sorry.
Oh, no. I was just wondering. You've done a great job this morning on getting us some great music, so we appreciate it. This is 10...
It's still good music. Yeah. Dave Brubeck.
Okay. KVY 10:30 a.m. Tucson's live local talk radio. We'll be back with more Wonder after the break. You're listening to The Morning Voice.
We're on Facebook Live. Go to 10:30 The Voice and watch along. You can see your voice. And on YouTube, if you'd like to watch there, The Morning Voice. We'll be right back on 10:30, The Voice.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. We're talking about Wonder, the good things going on at the University of Arizona. And we have a couple of people with us here who are wonderful. This segment is sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant on 4th Avenue and our friends at Hughes Federal Credit Union. Our guests for this segment are Teresa Rosano. She is a registered architect and lead accredited professional. She's an instructor in the College of Architecture and the founder of Ibarra Rosano Design Architects, a nationally recognized firm known for its modern desert architecture. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. Thank you
for being here. And Chuck Dunn is the founder of Charles R. Dunn Investment Advisors, but he's also one of the key people who helped formulate the Tucson Hope Factory. And good morning to you.
Good morning, Ed. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you all for being here. Teresa, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your story, why you're in Tucson, your educational background, and how you engage with the University of Arizona.
Hi. Well, I am an associate professor of practice at the School of Architecture, CAPLA. And I was born in Tucson. And attended the University of Arizona.
We're blood relatives then, because I was born in Tucson too.
Excellent. So. Yeah, there aren't many of us natives.
Especially at our age, you know. There's a lot of young kids that have been born here, but very few my age that are born.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I, for 25 years, had a was in professional practice, 20 of it with, as you said, Ibarra Rosano Design Architects. And for the last 6 years now, I've been teaching full-time at the university.
That's great. And you're going to head off to Italy in a little bit with 17 students.
That's
and
do some
architecture work over in Italy, right?
Yeah, to do a study abroad. We'll be doing a lot of drawing.
Okay, bueno. And you'll learn how to drink wine, as I attested to earlier. So it's and you just got back from Italy too. This is Chuck Dunn. He is part of the Hope Factory Tucson Hope Factory.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit before we get into talking about that. Let's talk about your story and why are you in Tucson?
So I'm in Tucson because I met my wife down at the U of A School of Art. She was at the School of Medicine, third year residency as an OBGYN. And I moved from Phoenix, which was easy for me to do, down to Tucson. We've been here 32 years. We've raised 4 kids, all Wildcats.
Great. Thank you for that.
And it's been wonderful. And we're just beginning to become empty nesters, so we're having more time to do more things for ourselves, like travel.
Right.
And the Tucson Hope Factory is taking up a bunch of our time here also, which is great.
Yeah.
It's a good project.
I like your shirt, by the way. It says the Eller undergraduate program. So.
That would be my eldest son, Matthew, who graduated from Eller, got his master's in accounting. He's a tech master at Amazon right now. Problem solver at Amazon. Great job.
What city?
He's right there and lives in Seattle.
You know what we need to do, Chuck? We'll mark that down, Adam. Let's get him on the air and let's talk. I like to talk about business success stories, and some of that is talking to alumni who are engaged in the business world. We'd love to get him on the air.
He's got a good story, and it's been the Wildcats, this Wildcat life we've developed. My wife, you know, graduated from medical school. I'm a Notre Dame grad, so don't hold that against me. I grew up in Phoenix. My dad was a physician, moved out in the mid-50s. Mm-hmm. So I went to Brophy College Preparatory, graduated from Notre Dame in 1979 with a degree in finance.
You went there with Rudy, didn't you?
Rudy was in my same year class. And Michael Parsegian, too, was a year ahead of me. Air Parsegian was the coach at the time.
Right.
Moose Kraus was the...
Parsegians live in Tucson.
They do. Yeah, they do. I feel like I got the old school Notre Dame before it switched over into the new
NIL. And
it's all changed. In the old days, it was handshakes. And so you could see, Joe Montana was two doors down from me. We played inter hall basketball together. He was a normal guy, third string.
Right.
Dan Devine turned him in... was lucky to have him because they won the national championship. But that was Air Parsegian's pickup there, and you get credit for.
That's really good. Well, you guys have done something really exciting. You've engaged with your students at the College of Agriculture, Planning and Landscape Architecture, and you have a project that you've developed for micro-shelter unhoused citizens, which is a huge issue, not only here in Tucson, but across the country. In almost every major city, and even some of the medium-sized ones and even some smaller ones, are having a real problem with people who are unhoused, whether that be for financial reasons or whether that be for medical reasons or other reasons, which we all know about. Tell us about your idea. Let's start first with you, Teresa. Let's tell us about a little bit about that project for the micro shelter for the unhoused citizen.
So how it came about was Chuck came to Kapla, specifically to the Drachman Institute, and we had a capstone studio that we were about to do, and so that seemed like kind of a perfect match. And so I had 16 students who were very excited to do a community engaged project that could help someone.
Right.
And so then, For both semesters, the fall and the spring, 16 students together with my co-teacher, Greg Veach, we worked together to first understand issues around homelessness. We visited Seattle, saw what they were doing with the Hope Factory there with Sound Foundations, built a tiny home there, and then continued talking with people around the community. And then over the course of this academic year, developed the micro shelter prototype and also several village plans and a framework by which we can study other sites in Tucson.
That's great. So Chuck, you're with the Tucson Hope Project, and you kind of were instigator of going to the college and recruiting them to think about this as an opportunity. It's been a gift, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been a total gift. I did not know at the time that it even existed. I have a neighbor next door, Barbara Bryson, that is recently retired, I believe, from the U of A School of Architecture. Mm-hmm. I pitched my idea to everybody. So she was walking her dogs one day, and I pitched my story about micro shelters, and her eyes lit up, and she goes, "I may have something for you." And boom, here we are today, thanks to Barbara's insight in collaborating with us to make this project happen.
That's great. And this is obviously a really important issue. Teresa, one of the students said that one of the roles of an architect is to build things for the larger community, including developers with a lot of capital, but also those who have little, if any, resources. And so why is architecture an important part of this community building?
Well, I think, unfortunately, very often architects are working for developers and often more, you know, well-to-do clients. And so the opportunity to work for in a community engaged way for people who don't normally get to live in, you know, mm-hmm. architect designed spaces is really exciting.
Right. And the irony of this is that every single person who's on a house affects the broader community. And so your project is really important because all of us are affected by people who are unhoused, and we see the effects of it every single day. All you have to do is just go to a local convenience store or go to a store or go buy one of the washes or whatever we have in Tucson, and it permeates our community. And so this project's really important for the community, right?
Ed, you hit on the right word there. It's community. What we're doing together is we're not only we're housing people, of course, but the real purpose is to come back to the community. Our goals here are to make this a better community for all of us. This is our hometown.
Right.
This is where we grew up. Let's make it our hometown. Let's make it a more hospitable place to live.
Right. You know, one of my hats that I wore, I ran for mayor a couple of times, and my focus was, you know, we can't just rely 100% on government to solve the homelessness problem and just, you know, drive by and look and complain that someone's on the street corner or whatever and not do anything about it. And so my big question is, where are the NGOs? Where are the community groups? Where are the religious groups? Where are the different charities and so forth engaged? And they're all engaged in this, but maybe more importantly, where are we as community members? Where are we involved in this? And we can criticize a lot and say no one's doing anything about it. But the question I have is you're a voter. What are you doing about it? And this project allows you to do something about
it. It's really going to be a pathway for a lot of us to take control of what's going on in our streets. Mm-hmm. This is a volunteer. The way we build this is similar to what they're doing in Seattle. They're built by volunteers. So if I can use an example, we put together a kit through the works we're doing with the university. A kit will have all the parts you need to build the home. We find a spot where we can build them, go through all the permitting and zoning that we're going to need, and then we bring the community in to actually build them. I have another charity called St. Francis Shelter Community,
right. mm-hmm.
and I get checks every now and then from people to say, I don't know how to deal with this homeless problem in Tucson, but I know you guys are up to something. Here's $200.
Right.
So we're now going to be able to create a situation where you can come in with a hammer under a controlled situation and actually help build these shelters.
Yeah.
That'll bring the community in to take advantage of an opportunity to help. Once they're in, they're in. And everybody's going to be able to point and say, I helped build that. I did that over here.
Right.
Now we've got community involvement. And that's really the crux of where we're getting here. The homelessness part is a big part of it, but we're trying to make Tucson a better place to live.
The Tucson Hope Project is really cool. Well, we'll come back after the break and talk a little bit more about the Tucson Hope Factory and what is going on there and how the students at the University of Arizona have done a great job of involving themselves in this project and coming up with the overall plan for these little communities and so forth. Our guests on Wonder are Teresa Rosano, an instructor at the School of Architecture, and Chuck Nunn, a founder of the Tucson Hope Factory. You're listening to The Morning Voice. We'll be back after the break. Our house. We love it. That's great. Thank you, Matthew. Our guests on Wonder are Teresa Rosano, an instructor in the School of Architecture, assistant professor of practice. That means an important thing. You're at the high level there of academic hierarchy, so that means you know what you're talking about. And Chuck Nunn, who is a guy that owns a company and is doing well for the last 32 years here in Tucson, one of the founders and one of the key people in the Tucson Hope Factory. We're talking about alternative housing and inexpensive housing for people who are unhoused and how the University of Arizona and the Tucson Hope Factory came together to come up with something meaningful. Let's talk a little bit about the house itself. Tell us a little bit about what it looks like, what the structure of it is. So what did the students come up with?
Well, the students were particularly interested in a few things, among them sort of environmental appropriateness,
mm-hmm.
Because our climate is so different than some of the examples they've looked
at. Seattle,
like
right?
Seattle,
where it rains all the time. Yeah.
Right. Very, very different climate. So they were very intent on making sure that their design was appropriate for our climate.
Right.
And then other things they looked at and studied were trauma-informed design. So looking at how spaces can make a different in terms of somebody's emotional well-being.
Right.
So they did quite a lot of research on, you know, these different factors, along with constructability, knowing mm-hmm. that this would be built by volunteers.
The kit that Chuck was talking about.
That's right.
A kit, yeah.
Yeah. So all of these factors they studied and they looked at, and they tried, you know, many different iterations, right. looking at all of these factors together, and then finally synthesizing them into a design that is very responsive to our mm-hmm. Climate,
right.
And incorporates trauma-informed design principles, and then finally is buildable by volunteers. And so for that, they created a whole series of manuals, mm-hmm. Almost like in a IKEA instructions.
Right.
And so they created a series of these manuals for volunteers to be able to build them. So they were thinking about this as they were designing it
and
themselves.
And one of the unique things, Chuck, is the storage was, you know, you see a person that's homeless that might have a shopping cart full of stuff. Mm-hmm. They got tons of stuff, and that's their stuff, and their mm-hmm. stuff is important to them. These little houses have incorporated storage places for these people to put their stuff too, right?
Right. Ed, you hit on the most important part here for the early stages of getting off the street, and that is safety.
Mm-hmm.
These shelters come with a key, so you qualify, you get to go in, you've got a key, you can shut the door. You're mm-hmm. safe. Your stuff is in one place. You can now start to heal.
Right.
You can start to take the steps needed to move yourself up into low-income housing and get jobs. And that's what we plan to do, is take you from a wet tent to right. eventually being in the low-income housing and having a job. That'll be our goal.
Yeah. And so there are some places that have been talked about as one that comes to mind. I heard a city councilman talking about the 100-acre woods over near Davis-Monthan Air Force Base by Craycroft and Swan there, where you turn around the bend there, and there's a whole bunch of tents out there in the middle of that federal land and Arizona land over there. And that could be a place where you build one of these communities that you're talking about. And that's just an example, but that's the kind of thing you're talking about, right?
Sure. Oh, yeah. I think it's important that we put these villages where the people are.
Right.
A lot of times they want to put them 10 miles outside of town. Well, how the heck are you going to get there? A lot of these folks, believe it or not, are from Tucson. They live here. They've been here a long time. We need to be where the people are. So right now we're at First and Fort Lowell, primarily with our right. St. Francis Shelter community. We have a food pantry there mm-hmm. for low-income people. We get a lot of folks that you don't see on the streets that come out in the morning for food. I had a little old lady, she looked like a little babushka gal last winter, and she came up to me and she said, because of the work that you're doing here, I don't have to choose between the medicines I need to live
That's
and the amazing. Food I need to live with.
That's
so
amazing.
Right there, I was like,
I'm in. Yeah.
That's in. We felt like we've done our job. Our food pantry is growing. It's the business that helped me find that I needed the next step.
Yeah.
Most everybody, the common denominator is with everybody we've helped over the last 10 years at First and Fort Lowell. We've been there for 10 years. The common denominator is I need a place to live.
That's great.
So this idea here in Seattle, they're making $5,000 homes and they're putting them in these communities and they're being run by the city. They've just approved 3 more. They've got 17 right now. They're going to have 20, up to 20, and then 23 they've approved. The system works. Let's climatize it, bring it to Tucson, and make it a Tucson project.
That's great. How can people make a donation to you and the Tucson Hope Project or to the St. Francis?
Thank you for asking that. We're 100% driven by private donations. We take no money from public entities, never have. So it's the monies from the people in our community and the businesses in our community to help us do what we do. So simply go to TucsonHopeFactory.org.
Great. And make a donation.
That's right on there. Love to have you come over. We've got some big plans coming.
Right.
Can't announce them yet, but we're hopefully going to have a lot more visibility very shortly.
We'll have you back and talk about Wonder. Thanks for being here this morning on The Morning Voice. We'll have you back and talk about your trip to Italy and the new villages.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you on Thursday at Casa del Rio. This is The Morning Voice.